Let's go! Come on everybody, and let's get to bumping, cause it's trailblazer time. Baby Rip City's jumping now.
Okay, Brindle up the middle. Hey!
Come on everybody. All right, everybody, welcome to the 377th edition of the Holy Backboard Podcast. I am Dustin here in Rip City, and I got my man
Sage chilling, ready to talk about the Blazers. It has been a minute since we recorded any type of content, so it is great to see you. Real life, as we're getting older, real life gets into the way, but I'm very happy that we can get together at 11:50 a.m. and record a podcast about a very interesting and struggling basketball team.
No, just a great little way to squeeze it in between baby's nap time and work lunch. You know, we make this happen. We may skip a week now, but we still make it happen. Yes, the Blazers are 19-48 on the season, second lowest in the West, fifth lowest overall. That hasn't changed in quite some time. We are down to now 15 games remaining. The Blazers have been officially eliminated from the postseason. I think even if you look at the Ringer's NBA odds, they still project Portland to maybe win four or five more games, but still end up with the fifth lottery odds. Teams to watch out for when you're looking at that sort of thing is probably Memphis and Toronto. Just hopefully they can pick up a win here or there. I really don't expect Charlotte to win too many more games. And you know that the Spurs are going to be careful with Wembanyama's minutes because he can be absolutely dominant and they want to get as high as possible as well. You know, we're in the stretch. This is really prime time tank. But to the Blazers' credit, I don't think they have been tanking. I just do not think they are a very good team. The only player they've been really bumping in and out of the lineup is Jeremy Grant. To recap the homestand that was, Portland went 2-4, which is exactly how I would have predicted it. We didn't get to the back end of that homestand, but I did think they would get a win against Toronto, which they did. But to start from the beginning, put up a valiant effort against the Oklahoma City Thunder, losing 128-120. Then they lose to the Houston Rockets, a game in which saw Houston really take advantage of trapping Anthony Simons and really putting the pressure on in the second half, running away from it 123-107. Portland basically tries to hand Toronto the game. DeAndre Ayton almost has a miraculous finish at the buzzer, but they really burst past them in overtime, winning 128-118. Boston handled business 121-99. That is not the team that you want to see when you are struggling. Their defensive scheme played right into Portland's hands and really just forced Portland to settle for contested jumpers, and they really controlled that game from the get-go. Portland then bounced back from a 17-point second quarter deficit to beat the Atlanta Hawks 106-102. That was a game that really just saw DeJounte Murray and a bunch of nobodies. No disrespect to Clint Capella or Wesley Matthews. Y'all played like a bunch of nobodies. It was really just DeJounte Murray putting up a 40 burger.
And it's been a long time since Wesley Matthews was the apple of my eye as a, you know, off-ball shooter. It's been a few presidents since he was like that dude.
Had Atlanta made their free throws, they missed, I think they shot sub 70% from the line, they would have beat Portland. They played Utah tough and they finally got their road win. They surprised the Clippers. So Quinn Snyder still has them playing tough. New York was just a horrible matchup for the Blazers. You know, Tibbs is going to play his dogs big minutes.
40 Josh minutes Hart, game, bro.
Josh Hart, OG, was playing with one arm. Jalen Brunson, another 40 piece. I believe he had the Blazer record opponent for this year in high. I think he scored 45 points in the game, which Anthony Simons did not play. Portland lost 105-93. Anthony played 43 minutes the night before, and it came out that he's been dealing with knee tendonitis. So this is why he sat against the Knicks on a back-to-back. You know, if a player, a caliber on your team of Anthony Simons is dealing with knee tendonitis, maybe don't run him that long. I don't give a crap about the win. Like, we have to be smart. We've already seen this Blazer team really ruin Shaedon Sharpe's season by playing him a stretch of 40-plus minute games post-injury. And look what's happened. He's been out since January 11th. And then they kicked off a two-game road trip They again, another valiant effort, but fourth quarter, the Pelicans and CJ McCollum just way too much. They outlast the Blazers 126 to 107. A lot to cover there, Sage. Overall, what was the main theme or takeaway you've taken from this early March start for the Trailblazers?
So obviously we're going to talk about DA. I think we'll talk about Golano Banton. We'll talk about, maybe some negatives in what we're seeing. But the thing that stuck out to me and the thing that I keep thinking about. So my mom got she got awarded at a ceremony for her job. And I was there in Portland for this award ceremony. And at one point during the ceremony, someone said, "Think about somebody that motivates you to try hard, to go the extra effort, to bust your ass." And then I was thinking, like, my mom was probably the person for me. And then I thought, do you think any of these Portland Trailblazers think about Chauncey Billups as like someone that motivates them? And I took Jeremy Grant and Anfernee Simons out of it because obviously, like, he favors them. But does anybody else feel like, wow, he is an inspiring coach, leader of men? He gets me to play my absolute best. And honestly, I thought, nah, he just doesn't do that part. And if he struggles, X's and O's. Because he absolutely does. Like, schematically, we're one of the worst offenses and legitimately one of the worst defenses. It's a very narrow
We are
list of things of that.
twenty-eighth in offense and 17th in defense. And
So
so
strategically, he is not that dude. He is not like a general commanding good orders. Like, he's the type of general that gets you, like, you get stopped in three angles. It's not good. So you got to think, is he a good motivator? Does he get the best out of them? Like, Nate McMillan gets the best out of dudes. Monty Williams, when he wasn't awful as a head coach, got the best out of dudes. I truly don't think that Chauncey is that guy that can get the best out of them. So it made me think, why was he hired? He doesn't motivate. He isn't strategic. It was just, it's just an awful hiring. And, thinking about like motivation, I'm like, no, there's no way DA feels good the entire year. There's no way Scoot Henderson feels confident. So to me, the players are great or struggled, but the coach I just don't trust what he can do as a leader of men, as a strategist. It's just bad vibes from the coaching staff.
Yeah, I don't remember what game it was. It might have been Toronto. I was listening to Michael Holton, and he was basically talking about the Raptors blitzing Anfernee Simons, coming with that heavy double, what we saw Houston do in the second half as well.
Chicago too.
And Michael Holton was basically like, the Blazers have to decide how they want to attack this. Anfernee Simons backing up and just allowing them to swarm him, it is not going to happen. And he gave, two different solutions. He's like, Anfernee needs to attack it, go straight ahead, or just blow by and go around. And for Michael Holton, who I value as a basketball analyst, he clearly played point guard for the Blazers and other NBA teams during his tenure in the league. But it was just like so matter of fact, nonchalant. It's like, why? How is our coaching staff not seeing this? And it's one of many things during the season that you really scratch your head because Ime Udoka made that exact adjustment in the second half because it was a very close game at halftime and Ant was having his way. They turned up the pressure and they had so many fast break points playing the passing lanes, getting their hands in the air. And that's what opened the game. It wasn't Şengün going to work. It wasn't Jalen Green, isolating. It wasn't Van Vliet getting to the middle. It was their defense leading to offense because they knew that the Blazers do not play well with pressure. And there have been no adjustments really made to that. So that's been a bit of a frustration. To your question, I think certain players are playing hard for Chauncey. I think certain players are finding it difficult. I think Scoot Henderson's one that's finding it a bit difficult with his role. Clearly injuries have played they played a big part in it. He's missed chunks of seasons. Every time he's had a rhythm, he's been set back by a pretty lengthy injury. And then you've basically got Chauncey saying, no, Scoot's gonna start. And then he brings him off the bench. Oh, he's on a minutes restriction. No, the minutes restriction's off. No, the minutes restriction's back on. You just don't really see any consistency with
No.
what Scoot's doing. And I texted you, I was like, man, I'm so jealous of how Ime Udoka and the Houston Rockets are developing Amen Thompson. Like, you watch him out there, and at first I was like, oh, they're just giving him no on-ball reps. Well, maybe he's not ready, but they got Fred VanVleet. They got Jalen Green, they got Şengün, they got Jabari Smith. They've got really good young talent mixed in with some vets, but they let him go out there and do what he does best, play suffocating defense, who probably would be an all first or second team defender. Same with his
He's
brother. He
healthy,
played the minutes requirement. And they play a type of defense that allows him to get into the passing lanes. And he's a monster on the glass because of his athleticism, and he's a fantastic finisher. So getting out in transition, he's putting up 18 and 8 without really needing to touch the ball. And when you look at Scoot Henderson, where does he thrive? He thrives in the mid-range, and he thrives with the ball in his hands. And he likes getting people involved. How many times do you just, like, when he's out on the court, it's like one out of every three or four possessions he's actually initiating the offense.
Yeah,
Like,
it's just a really bad, it's just a bad utilization of the assets that the Blazers have. You have a guy that could be one of the best on-ball creators in the NBA, and you're giving those reps to Ant, who needs them for sure. He needs to learn how to break a press, like, go through it, around it. Or pass the fucking ball. One of the three. One of the three would always be good. And then, Delano Banton is playing really well. But I do not want Delano Banton playing really well to affect Scoot Henderson. And it absolutely has. Like, Banton's been running the offense more so than Scoot. And that really doesn't help Scoot develop because he's not the best shooter. He needs to work on that in the offseason for sure. But to just have him be in the corner suffocates everything else because we're taking another poor shooter, putting him off ball, and people can just be in the paint and congestion. So it adds another issue to our spacing. So I just think that
how
even
many
if
times do you think Delano Banton has taken 20 or more shots over the past 8 games?
I'm gonna say six.
4 times. Delano Banton, the player we acquired for a pick that's never going to come
Never,
through, 4 times. He has shot 50% minimum once in those games. So
So it's
this is
empty
not,
calories.
yeah, this is not an anti-Banton rant. This is more of a, what are we kind of doing here, right? Like
And
there's.
Banton's been hitting threes. Put him off ball, have Scoop initiate.
Scoot got a lot of assists in that Toronto, or not in that Toronto game, the Boston game, just feeding Delano Banton. And that's what I really watched the Boston game closely because I knew Scoot was coming back. It was the second game returning. I knew we were going to play our guys heavy because you're on national TV, on NBA TV, you're playing the team with the best record, you're going to get up for them. Jeremy Grant played, and I was like, okay, Delano Banton is not going to get heavy usage. How does he look scaled down? And if he can just hit, like, because all he really took in that shot diet, he only got 6 shots, by far the fewest over that 8-game stretch. He only got 6 shots. He didn't get a lot of on-ball reps. But if he can play that Lonzo Ball 3 role, where yeah, if you're at a fast break, you're comfortable with him handling the ball. But for the most part, you need to be able to knock down open threes and play defense and use your length and again, get out in transition. So it wasn't until the fourth quarter that he hit those threes, but he had 4 rebounds. Like I don't think this, 20 shot per game
The
diet
shot
would
diet is unsustainable. Like,
that, like top two, like even your second option might not even get 20 shots. Like I remember cringing when CJ was putting up 20 shots a night. Like it just, that is a lot of shots. That is almost a quarter of your shots
Do
per
you
night.
think he is third on our team of usage right now?
It's so hard because Jeremy is playing in and out. He
I'm looking
probably
it up
has to
right
be.
now.
He probably has. I would do that 8-game stretch. He probably has to be because you got Ant and DA who have both been playing.
No, well, I didn't even put a filter on. I just said Delonte Banton on the floor, like able to play, because I think he's played every game. Like every game that he potentially could play, he's. So he is second on the team of usage. Anfernee Simons is one, Delano's two, Jeremy's three, and DeAndre's four. That is unsustainable usage. And I'm not like I think that he has earned himself a NBA roster spot into the in the future for sure. He has shown the ability to rebound at a high level for his position. I think that his playmaking is pretty good. I think it's better than Anfernee Simons. I think it's better than I think it is legitimately an average playmaking guard. He can do that stuff. But we're not talking about Delano Banton leading the team. We're not talking about Delano Banton just needs reps to become a quality starting point guard or even better. We're talking about Delano Banton as a gadget guy that could come in and play a role. We're talking about Scoot Henderson as a potential cornerstone of the franchise.
We're
Why are
talking
we
about
giving
Scoot
Delano?
Henderson, the second highest draft pick in 40 years. Just let that sit in. Only 2007, Greg Oden taken first overall, was a higher pick in the past 40 years. That is a lot of investment that you're just technically just throwing away right now if you're Portland. You're just saying, no,
None of this
we
shit matters. None of these games matter. If we lose by 60, that's just gonna be another game we lost by 60. We're not competing for anything. Give Scoot as many minutes as he is medically cleared to play. Let him learn. Because I feel like Scoot Henderson is he's not playing confident whatsoever. And it's really easy now. For whatever reason, I was watching the New Orleans Pelican game very closely. Very, very closely. Maybe it was because I was falling in love with Zion again. But he would just go baseline and jump up and have no plan of what he was doing multiple times. And you know the Pelicans, even without Herb Jones, all of these dudes are super long-armed and tall. So they have a better chance of stealing the ball off of his baseline drive pass. And it happened over and over and over again. And I dug the way that he played against Jose, who was very aggressive. But it's just been bad tape because I don't think he's confident in his role. He's been like going from, yeah, he's playing, he's starting to, yo, he minutes limit, minutes limit. Has to, he's 19 years old. He doesn't like you're treating this dude like he's like a vet that knows, you know, his role in things.
Do you
So
think he's 100% healthy?
probably not, honestly. I think that he's, I think that his competitive drive is too high, and I think he can play and he will play because of that. Like, he's a gamer. He just doesn't have
Yeah,
the
his first game
confidence.
back, there's close up close and personal. He's guarding Emmanuel quickly. He gets up on him like he's clapping his hands, talking to quickly. Quickly scored on him, but that's the type of competitive spirit and drive that he has.
So,
So like he's locked in when he's out there.
my thing is, you see how he gets into Quickley's ass. You see how he got into, Jose Alvarado. I don't know if you've seen the game yet. He got into Jose Alvarado. He wanted to body him. Why are we so timid with our defensive rotations when we have a guy that wants to be a bulldog and get right into the guard, giving him no space? Then we play so passively when we get screened. Like, you know, Scoot Henderson wants to go through that screen and go over the top and then lock and chase. We're not doing offensively. We're not playing to our team's strength. And defensively, and I know we were told that our defensive coordinator, I forgot his name right
Roy
now,
Rogers.
Rod Rogers, was a defensive guy. But we have DA and Scoot, who are plus defenders on this roster. Jeremy Grant, too. Like, but he's more of a team defense, not a individual 1v1. I think we should really utilize those three guys. And if and when Shaedon Sharpe returns this year, which I seriously doubt, we should create a defense and an offense based on who we have on the court, not Roy Rogers' scheme. And I know that me saying this is like, it's hard. It's hard. But if you're getting paid millions and millions of dollars, you probably should not look for scheme fits. You should fit your scheme around the players that you do have who you've spent X amount of money and draft capital on. But yeah, I just think Scoot is a gamer, but he doesn't feel confident in his position on this team, and he doesn't feel confident in how he's playing. Like, sure, the Celtics game, he looked great, but then you look at what, like, it's just like the limited minutes and the limited role just doesn't, it's bad thought process. If Ben can hit a three, if he can draw a closeout, let's not even say hit a three, but if the NBA player, if he's in the corner and the NBA guy, like, I have to close out on Delano Banton, you know how good he could be, like, off some attack the closeout and then make a play? We should get him on that and not driving 27% of our off. He's playing like Luka Doncic on our team when he's on the ball.
He really doesn't have a handle. He's a straight line driver. It gets knocked away quite a bit. There's no wiggle.
He reminds me of Cody Williams, bro, with the handle.
Yeah, he can finish. He's showing the three. Like, he just needs the role scaled down, and I don't know why we're giving him
the second most usage.
Yeah, it doesn't make a lot of sense. But speaking of Scoot in offense, he was getting to the line, heard on the radio, in the 98th percentile in the month of February. And he's when he's out there, he's just not, we're not putting him in a position to get to the cup.
I don't think it's like, you can argue a little bit that Scoot isn't as good as you imagined year one. Sure. But I can say, yeah, Chauncey Billups is just not putting him in any position to succeed. Like, he has all the tools. Like, he's a five tool player, maybe a four tool if we're talking about 3-point shooting. He's not there yet, but he can be. So he's a high level guy that we're just treating like, you know, the sixth hitter. God damn, I can't wait for baseball. But you know, like, we're not treating him with the second most draft assets ever, you know, in 40 years. Like, this, it's confusing what Chauncey's doing. I just hope that the Chauncey Billups mess is over now. Like,
I mean, we're in year three of the tank. We'll be lucky to win 20 games.
Is he a free agent, or does he have
one? Nope, there's one more year, then it's a free agency year. Team option year, I assume.
We need to just pay him to go away. Like, at this point in time, like, next year kind of matters. Pay him to go away.
You're really on that clock to, like, pay off that Chicago pick. Because if you don't pay off that Chicago pick in 2028, they get that Milwaukee pick. Like, that's how that works. Mm-hmm. So you would basically have just handed them over a large part of the assets you traded for your franchise player and Damian Lillard.
Yeah.
Because you're incapable of making the playoffs. Now, do I think they're going to try and play the young? This offseason will be very interesting because the 2025 draft class is loaded. They are nowhere near contending. The thing that worries me the most about the Blazers is their inability to commit.
Mm-hmm. But that's been the thing forever.
Can they commit to a rebuild, right? And all we heard this offseason and from Joe Cronin at the deadline was, we like our roster. Hey, we feel like we had a good foundation when we start this rebuild. Buddy, you didn't. That's why you had to tear the whole goddamn thing down. Like, Shaedon getting hurt threw a huge wrench into this building process. You kind of have to kickstart year two of your rebuild over next year. You have to see what you got from Scoot and Shaedon. They've only played 320 minutes together. Mm-hmm. That's not enough.
You have
to see, like, DA looks like a solid contributor, but at a certain point, are you going to pay him a second max contract? I don't know if that's the case.
There's so many questions that need to be
Jeremy
answered.
Grant's got four more years left. Malcolm Brogdon is going into a final year of his contract. Matisse Thybulle is going into the final year of his contract next year. You still have Anfernee Simons, who has 2 years left on his deal, and he doesn't seem like he fits. Like,
Chris Murray.
what? You have four, you basically have 14 players. Like, you don't have enough roster spots for these four draft picks that you have coming up in the 2024 class this June. Like, my biggest worry is that Joe's like, no, the roster's solid. There was just injuries. And that's the same goddamn excuse we've heard for the past
Neil.
3 years. Just injuries, injuries, injuries. And I call BS. Like, they've underperformed. They're underdeveloped. The same questions we'd be having about Scoot, we'd be having with Brandon Miller or Amen Thompson. This staff is not a good developmental one, and it's very, very hard to see a light at the end of the tunnel until they get serious with who they want to lead this team. Because you're just seeing the same mistakes over and over again. And I'm sorry, playing hard is not enough when you're a tanking team, when you're a bad team. I need to see players get better. Anfernee Simons is the same player he was that he was 2 years ago after you traded CJ McCollum and after Damian Lillard was hurt. Like, he's the same exact player. Like, how are we getting better? Like, this is the same coaching staff that played Shaedon Sharpe like 8 minutes in March against the Pelicans last year and then let him loose and he showed what he could do. And then they were going to bring him off the bench. Then they started him but didn't give him the ball. And then they played him 41 minutes and got him hurt. Like, they have zero idea of how to manage a roster. Maybe an individual player, they are good here and there, but to manage a collective
Of
of talent
people, yeah.
and put them together and have them work in certain roles and put them in positions to succeed, it's not happening. And I will say, I don't think Joe Cronin, I think he's done them a bit of a disservice. I think right now the team has too many dudes. And by that point, I mean, not necessarily good players, but you're in a developmental period where you're trying to figure out seven players in their first or second year. That is a lot of players to try and give time to see what they have. Like, it's hard enough doing it with one or two. You're trying to do that with seven guys. So, I mean, and then you have four picks. It seems like a lot. It seems like they can't decide who they want, what they want to do.
And then the roles that they should be in.
I mean, you look at Jabari Walker. He was starting towards the end of the calendar year. He played really well. Jeremy was at the three, and they just bumped him out of the lineup. And you've seen the same thing with like Tumani. He was scaled up earlier. They scaled him back. They inserted him in the starting lineup, and they put him out. And it's just like, can we just get some consistency? Like,
And same
Justin
with
Mathai
Chris.
is getting minutes over Rand Rupert. Like, it's really hard, for a lack of a better word, hard to justify the rationale in which this team is being ran, both from a managerial perspective and a coaching perspective. And I've defended Cronin in the past, but like, this offseason, I think, is going to be, I've said before, it's going to be more important than trading Dame.
Well, Dame trading Dame's easy. Trading Dame for a big package is easy. He just happened to be the person that happened to trade him. Like David Griffin hit a home run with 80, right? But building around the asset pool that they get for the superstar is where you earn, another contract, essentially. Right now, I'm kind of saying the same things that I talked about with Neil. Like, we have a superstar player, but we don't really build around them. I really think like one of the things like with free agency or the draft, do they fit with Scoot and Shaden has to be the number one thing. Like I'm going to do a podcast on Dylan Jones of Weber State in the next few hours. I think he's good. Does he fit with Scoot and Shaden? No, he absolutely doesn't. So like you have to take apart the. I think Dylan Jones is good. Does he have a role in this team? Absolutely fucking not.
Yeah, and that's it. I don't think they even have the question. I think that's what's troubling. They don't even have the question. And the question for us is, do they fit with Scoot and Shaden? Like, those are the pieces that we're ready to say, Let's just go ahead and build around them. If it works, it works. If it doesn't, then we got to keep trying. But they still are trying to make this
And work.
Jeremy Grant, DeAndre Ayton, Anthony Simons, Malcolm Brogdon, like you have too many vets right
That's
there,
it.
right? I think you can scale Malcolm down, which is why I'd be fine keeping him as a backup, and I think he's shown a willingness to be here. DeAndre has been basically a good soldier the whole season, and you can kind of punt the decision on whether to keep him or not based upon his contract for a year or so. But like they really have to figure out what to do with Anthony Simons this offseason, because I just think
I
that
don't
is
think
the
he fits
he
permanently.
does it. And I think that is the, we talk about this with CJ and Dame. If the Warriors can get Klay fucking Thompson to come off the bench, a player who was part of four championship teams, arguably a top 75 player of all time,
Hall of
arguably the
Famer.
second best shooter of all time, first ballot Hall of Famer, if they can get him to come off the bench, you damn sure better get Anthony Simons to come off the bench. And if he doesn't want to, then you have to move him, because you can't defensively, you're going to get annihilated every single night. Like Boston has two large wings, and every good team, there's going to be a
True
Giannis.
Holiday would eat ants lunch.
There's going to be a Wemby. There's going to be a Zion. There's going to be a Luka. Like throughout the course of NBA history, there's going to be these monstars you're going to have to go through. Doesn't matter if they're in the West or the East. If you want to win the ultimate chip, you're going to have to go through teams that present length, size, and athleticism. And you're going to get destroyed if you play a small backcourt, which we have done. So they need to figure that out. That's their question that they need to figure out. The Ringer is not the end all be all. They did rank their top 100 players. They updated it. Only the Washington Wizards had their best player ranked lower than the Blazers. So by the Ringer standards, Portland's top end talent, they had Anthony Simons at 65, three Blazers total on that list with Malcolm Brogdon and Jeremy Grant. So only the Wizards had lower top end talent than the Blazers, and I don't think that's incorrect. So the Blazers, if that's the case, if they're saying that your best player is 65, you need to hopefully develop your lottery picks so they can become better. Because I mean, Anthony Simons is about to turn 25 years old, and say, I don't know many 25-year-old players
That
that
take a step.
automatically just get like.
So I was thinking about this. If Anthony Simons is, if his best role is Gunner sixth man on the bench, off the
It
bench,
is. It is.
why don't and we have so many picks this draft. Why don't we just trade Anthony Simons and get Rob Dillingham to do that exact same role for a lot cheaper?
I mean, I don't think that role is still like you would want that player to be taller, right? And a little bit better defensively. Like Anthony Simons' defensive rating metrics are bad.
Oh, yeah.
He's one of the worst defenders statistically in the
In the
league.
league. Rob's not going to be much better.
Exactly. I don't think he's going to be much better. And I think Anthony Simons is a proven commodity. He's so good at getting buckets. Like he off the bench, like I know I talk negative. I'm very critical about Anthony Simons, but it's because the role he's placed in is above his skill set. It truly is. He's not a first or second or third option. Maybe a third option if you're playing with two all-world players and all-world defenders. So we're
If he was
talking
on the
about
Boston, he'd be three.
you're basically needing to specialize him if he's going to be a top three option. He would be so elite at coming off the bench, winning sixth man, finishing against opponents that the matchup calls for. But they're, I mean, and I'll give him credit. His body language was terrible in Memphis. He's really turned it around. He's carrying out there. He's trying. He's had some monster nights, played fantastic against the Atlanta Hawks in particular. And the Oklahoma City Thunder, but he can't be your best player. He can't be your
No,
second best player.
no.
He probably can't be your third best player. Like
But we're treating him like he is.
yes. So the Blazer front office, that they have to come to that realization. Otherwise, we're going to be just making episodes like this on a weekly basis for the foreseeable future. And nobody wants to hear that. Nobody wants to watch that. Like he just would be so good. Like he's so good with the ball in his hands. You could scale his minutes with Scoot. You could give him more on ball reps. You could play him off ball if you needed to. You could let him get hot in instances. He could still get his 15 shots up. He just doesn't need to be playing all those extra minutes on defense. Like, it could work. I just don't know if the Blazers
Well,
have
do
the.
we have a coach that can sell them on that? I don't think
It's
we
not
do.
about the coach. You just have to say, do you want to, if you want to stay here, you're coming off the bench. We'll accommodate a trade request, but you've still got 2 years left on your deal. You're not Damian Lillard. We're not just gonna, you don't have that gravitas, right? He's not an all-star. He's not a Zion or an AD or Carmelo that's like, nope, I'm trade request. I'm holding that. Like, he would get laughed out of the league if he tried to hold out, right? Like, we saw kind of, I think Kai Jones might have had some mental issues going on, but we saw what happened with Kai Jones. He just got picked up by the Sixers, but he basically was like, I want a trade request. The Hornets were like, okay, you're just cut. So you have to have some sort of gravity in the league to have those demands. You can say, we can look for a trade, like we want this role for you. We see this as the best role for you. He's gonna have to want that for himself,
I mean,
right?
I think the last few episodes, it was basically like, if he
Because I
wants
just
that
don't think
third.
they're making the point of emphasis to run him off ball. Like, there's just maybe one or two a night, and it's.
Could you imagine if we had the schematics of a Warriors where Anthony's running through a zipper screen and getting a wide open shot? I
Steph
mean,
Light.
yeah,
Steph Light. Yeah. It's possible, and that's what's so frustrating.
just think if Charles Lee or Juwan Howard had him running certain sets, like we're
Mike
seeing,
D'Antoni.
we're seeing. I'm watching UCLA run zipper cuts for their shooters and having Cody Williams get stopped in between it. Like that type of basketball absolutely exists. And I think having Ant be an off-ball guy that runs around like he's Jordan Hawkins would be the like he could get an all-star bid if he was just
Ant
buying in on
reminds me a
that.
lot of Jamal Crawford. Jamal Crawford was great off of screens, but he was lethal with the ball in his hands too. And he just sometimes he finished games. Other times he was just in there for like bursts. And you fear Jamal Crawford coming into games. Like whether it was with Atlanta, whether it was with the Knicks, like
Clippers.
Clippers. I mean, I think we played him in the playoffs when he was on the Clippers, and he just tough. I mean, one of the greatest six men of all time. And I think that's Ant ceiling. And until the organization recognizes it, we are going to be kind of in this circle of.
Kicking the can down the road. I
So.
like I, if he could. He has a pull-up jumper that is elite. If he could utilize all of the talents that he has that not many people in the world have, like he has all of the tools to be a super duper star. But I think that if he just had a portion of Jimmy Butler's mentality, he could be an all-star. It's just I don't think he has that dog in him that Jimmy
Well,
or
he's also much leaner. You look at,
True,
Butler,
true.
a tank. Ant Edwards is a tank. But also being a sixth man, I'm not going to bitch if you get two rebounds and one assist, and you don't if you're shooting well or poorly and not impacting the game elsewhere. That doesn't matter. Sixth men are there just to score. It's all you got to do. Put the ball in the bucket. Fun question that I asked you. I saw on a message board. So you keep four. The rest just disappear from the roster without compensation. And here's the list: Jabari Walker, Tumani Kamara, Ryan Rupert, Matisse Thybulle, Rob Williams, Delano Banton, Chris Murray, and the Golden State Warriors first round pick projected to be number 14 in the draft. You get to keep four, the rest just disappear. I've thought about this back and forth. I want to get your take. What four are you taking? And I'm gonna see if we agree or not.
The potential of the 14th pick still gets me if we can
Yep.
get
Oh yeah, I'm definitely taking the lottery pick for sure.
if we can get Tyler Smith or Stephen Castle, which I know him if we get Stephen Castle, another dude who can't shoot, but still. So the lottery pick is or the first round pick is absolutely number one.
Can we agree on Tumani Kamara?
Yeah.
Yeah,
Yeah, yeah.
I've loved how he has started to attack closeouts. He's playing some. I mean, he had a just a
If he's
vivid.
our eighth man, I'm totally satisfied.
Yeah, he had
If
that
he's
great
our starting
rebound.
four, is if he's in our starting five, I'm dissatisfied.
Great
It's
rebound
role.
to seal the Atlanta game off the I think it was the DeAndre miss at the foul line. His shot, to be perfectly honest, looks better than Chris Murray. They're both a little bit slow, but it looks much better. I think he's going to shoot a much better percentage moving forward. Been highly impressed with Tumani. So we both have Tumani in the first round pick. I got two more spots left. What do you got?
I mean, I said this, but if we can guarantee 100% health, Rob Williams is in there.
Nope.
But that
It's
just
just
not,
that you get the
but that
player as they
doesn't,
are.
yeah, this is an NBA 2K where you can turn off
Nope.
injuries.
He's
So Rob
Rob
has to
Williams
go.
coming off of an ACL injury.
Yeah, he had with his injury luck in the past, I just can't put him in that elite four. I still believe very much in Chris. And then I would go Ryan Rupert, but if I knew who we were drafting with our pick, that might change. Like if I knew who we were drafting with our pick and Warriors pick, it might change. But since I don't know that information, I would go the Warriors pick, Tumani, Chris, and Ryan. But if we had Ron Hollins and Dalton Knecht, peace out. Peace out to both of those wings.
I'm keeping the first pick for the Warriors, 14th pick, taking Tumani. I was a big believer of Rupert pre-draft, and I love the length. I think there's just so much upside there to be tapped into. So he's definitely a third option of that four. The last one comes down to Jabari Walker, Chris Murray, and Delano Banton. I'm not choosing Matisse Thybulle just because I think he's a little bit older than the core is, although he's played fabulous this year. I think if you can get, you should have no problems getting a solid draft pick for him, especially with how he's shooting the three this entire season. Rob Williams is just too injury prone. So yeah, it comes down to Jabari, Chris, and Delano. It's been Chris for so long, but the shot is just so bad. Like right now, it's just he's not even he's hitting the side of backboards. He's airballing. Like
Well,
he
he's one
does
of
so.
those dudes that Chauncey just doesn't give enough
He's
of
starting.
his
He's playing
comfort.
30 minutes a night, dude. Like he's actually getting the chance, and he does so many things well. I was there at the Houston game where he almost got the triple double. Like if the shot was better, it would be a no brainer. But like it's continued to struggle, so he's on the tail end of it. And you've got Jabari who does something that none of the players that we've mentioned do. He gets in there and gets dirty. He grabs rebounds and he scraps and he's kind of an emotional leader, something we don't really have on this team. And then Delano, just at least shooting the basketball, has been, I didn't know he had that in his game. Like I
I mean,
thought he
he
was just.
didn't. He de he didn't in any like. I looked at his college statistics, before when he was traded, and I was like, he's a good rebounder. He's a good passer. He's an atrociously bad shooter. Like, and that he's obviously worked on his game. I still think that Delano's production is replaceable from any of the picks, any of the good picks. So I would still pick Chris, and then
I would pick, I think I'm taking Jabari, and here's my reasoning. I think highest ceiling of those three is Delano. I think size, shooting, I think he still has the highest ceiling. Chris, I think, is the smartest of the three, and I think he does the little things well. And if he just shot just even a little bit better, it'd be a no-brainer. But I'm really worried about the shot. Jabari gives us something we don't have. And that's what why I would take him with that fourth one. And also I don't think there's a player like Jabari in the draft, or at least where we're sniffing around in those top 14 picks.
Yeah, I'm still taking Chris, but that seed is getting warmer with more picks being, us having more picks. And I know this draft is not top end high at all, really. But I feel like there's a lot of good role players that can do an approximation of Delano or Jabari or Chris. Like, I think Tristan Da Silva is a really nice mixture of Delon of to Monty and Chris. So I mean, I was a Chris guy. I watched him when he was confident and in his own. But he has to produce in the next year, or he might be one of those first round picks that doesn't get a second contract from the team that drafted him.
All right, before we look at the upcoming week, let's talk about DeAndre Ayton. He's just been an absolute man child recently in the month of March, putting up 27 points and 15 rebounds, shooting 63% from the field, finally getting nearly 20 field goal attempts per night. Free throws are up, shooting 85% from the line. Sage, what have you liked from DA?
I've liked damn near almost everything that he's produced in the last month. I mean, this, if he's getting paid max money, he has to produce like this consistently. Like that's the difference. He has the ability to do whatever he could be David Robinson if he really wanted to. He could be one of those elite centers if he wanted to. This last month, he's shown the ability to want to be great. Like there were certain months where he wasn't getting the ball and he wasn't doing anything and he looked depressed. He at least now looks involved and he can show that you don't need to look at Yves Mises. I'm right here and I'm dominating and playing some really good basketball. So if he can play like this for the rest of the year, I would be super happy with him. He's giving you everything you need from a big that's not like a playmaking hub. He's running, he's blocking shots, he's rebounding, he's scoring when he gets the ball. He's taking advantage of mismatch. He can score in the paint. Like he's doing everything you want. He's like an elite version of that Tyson Chandler build right now. Like he definitely has the abilities and the athleticism of a Tyson, and he's showing that he's skilled too. So I've been very happy with DeAndre Ayton in the last month.
As have I. He's basically had a double-double in every game going back to February 23rd against the Denver, basically since the All-Star break. The only one he didn't get was he had 28 against the Pelicans. Monster night against the Hawks, 33-19, completely destroyed Clint Capella. Isaiah Hartenstein was on that Ringer's top 100 list. DA wasn't. Destroyed Isaiah Hartenstein, 31-14. What I
Isaiah
love about
Hartenstein's like a top five defensive center, though.
But I mean, DA just, I'm just saying, like that's
Did
why
you get a chance
it
to
was
see the
more of an
Pelican game yet?
indictment on it was more of an indictment on these lists that people put together because they're made with much bias.
Did you see him against New Orleans yet?
Yeah.
Like the way that he attacked the pick and roll and got Jonas in fucking hell, basically. Like the Pelicans for the first half when they were competing, the Pelicans couldn't do shit with the pick and roll. We just went away from it. But like it kept us in the game. It fed us. It fed families. That pick and roll against the Pelicans fed families. And then we went away from it. The fact that he moves so well, those plotting centers just you have to go small against him, essentially. And then he can post him up. Like there aren't that many dudes that are 7 feet that can move the way DA moves.
But you're absolutely right. He needs to average 27 and 15 for a season to justify the
Supermax.
salary because you look right now, Portland still has the 16th highest payroll. That's really high considering their record. They don't have hardly anyone coming off the books next year. If you're looking just at Ayton, Grant, Simons, and Brogdon, they're making $111 million. That's I think at least three quarters of next year's cap. So you're gonna have to figure something out. DA's making $34 million next year, $35 million in 2026. That extension is probably gonna put him closer to 45 and 50. So if you have a player like in today's salary cap, when you've got first and second aprons, you can have maybe one or two dudes making that money. So you better have that player
You better
be
be
an
damn sure.
all-star, be an all NBA. Like you need the 27 and 15. Like 18 and 12, not good enough for that salary. And that's just how it's gonna be. Let somebody else get that salary on their books. So that's gonna be the tough question with EA. It's not really performance. It's can he perform up to the salary demands?
He has to be a top tier, top tier center.
I think to make that money, he's got to be top five. And right now you're looking at, Jokic, Şengün, Embiid, Wemby,
AD,
like who?
Anthony Davis,
Yeah, if you want to put him out of the
Sabas.
center. Yeah. I think DA could be better than than Sabas given his defensive tendencies. But yeah, he's got to be in that
If he's
probably.
not on that, if he's at the tier below,
Oh, there's Bam. We didn't mention Bam.
if he's on the tier below, you
It's
gotta
not worth
be
it.
prepared to say goodbye to DeAndre Ayton.
And that's just the nature of the new salary cap. And when you've got like by Scoot's final year in 2028, before
His second.
everything gets restructured, like he's making $19 million. Shaden's making $11 million the second year. Like when you're having a tanking season again and you're drafting this high, those rookie scale contracts aren't so rookie scale. I mean, the cream of the crop get paid really, really well. And so you have to be, this is again goes back to like who are you building the team around? Like you have to be very money ball cap smart and
Do you
savvy.
remember
And
when the Knicks had all of those high contract players and were tanking and bad, and Isaiah was just trading away first round picks like they were nothing,
yep.
and then the collapse of the New York Knicks happened? We're on that level of pay structure. Like, these dudes are good, but not for us. Like, we have to scale back and think about things logically with our salary.
Yeah, and you've got Robert Williams on the books for two more years, potentially not really playing. You got Matisse on the books for one more year, then he's got a player option. Like, I think you need to find a way to shed some of the salary this summer. Probably JG or Anthony. I think you could get Malcolm signed at a lower number given his tenure, given his injury concerns, and scaled back
Well,
role.
and he failed the physical a year ago.
Yeah. So, yeah,
So,
overall, it been not the season I think a lot of us hoped. I think Shaden, we really wanted to see what year two was going to bring, and we didn't get to see that. A lot of assets that we brought in, I didn't expect us to all have them still. And we're even adding on to that with Delano. Like there's so many players fighting for time and
cannibalizing each other. So I
kind
have
of
one
sort of, yeah.
question before we go into predicting. March Madness is happening. What is your philosophy on the tournament? Does it sway you a lot? Like, let's just say Dalton kills it. Does that performance sway you that much? Or do you try and just be like, that's just another piece of the puzzle? I also don't think Dalton Connect can go that much higher with how like what his role is, but like does the NCAA like swayed you in any way? Start of the
No,
tournament.
no. It used to, and I got bit in the
You
butt
get burned by
when
it quite a bit if you
I
do.
got burnt by it in 2006.
Yeah.
I was high on Tyrus Thomas, and he completely owned LaMarcus Aldridge, and I was like, "That's my guy. We got to get Tyrus Thomas." LaMarcus can't even do nothing, getting blocked at the rim. LaMarcus has an all-star career. Tyrus Thomas, I don't think got a second contract,
I
right?
think he
Like.
got eight. I think he has 8 years in it. Like,
Yeah, either way, he was no nothing more than I would say a subpar role player, if I'm being friendly. James Harden also struggled at
Franz
Arizona
Wagner
State.
sucked.
Yeah, he was awful. Like he
Yeah.
was Sam, I saw Sam Decker get hot for Wisconsin. Like, and he did nothing. Like it's all about context. Now, on the other hand, though, if somebody gets hot, how are they getting hot? CJ McCollum, how he just basically dissected Duke, I was like, these moves are translatable. That's league. Same thing with Jordan Hawkins. I was like, he's doing a lot of NBA stuff right now. Like, there's a defined role for him. He may not be a superstar, but there's a role that he can easily carve out. Now, With Dalton specifically, it's going to be tough because teams just lock in on him.
Oh
Like
yeah.
they'll send two guys at him. They'll shadow him. It's hard for him to get looks. So if he struggles, don't just write him off.
Yeah.
He's basically being given
Backpack
the
them
Luke.
the
He's
entire
getting the
year.
Luka treatment right
Yeah.
now, and he's
He
not
was
that
their
player.
backpack the entire year offense. They
Yeah.
are, I'm gonna say this in our podcast Wednesday, so don't be shocked when you hear the same thing twice on two separate episodes. Tennessee is like the 0-1 Sixers, and Dalton Connect is their Iverson.
Yeah.
Like they don't have dudes that can score. Dalton was brought in. Hey, we need you to be our backpack for this entire year. I guess I should have used Jacoby Walter if he had a big tournament. I think that could sway some people because he's been so cold for so long. So he might sway them, but like he was still good to begin with. So it's just making up for the epically shitty cold streak.
No, I just think it's in context. How are
Yeah.
they dominating, right? Like if it's a Keegan Murray at Iowa, but he's just going back to the basket. Michael Beasley at Kansas State in 08, he's just scoring over smaller opponent. That's not translatable. But are they, isolating? Are they getting to the lane quick? How do they look? Like you want to look for NBA style moves, not college style moves. If that's the easiest way that I can kind of break it down. And like if they're scoring, making it look easy, doing NBA caliber moves, then you're like, okay, yeah. But if they're just being completely just swarmed because nobody else on their team is able to help them out, you can't really hold that against them.
Do you have the team that you think's gonna win?
I haven't fully filled out my bracket yet. I don't think it's going to be. I won my bracket last year. I picked UConn as a 4 seed and they won it all. And I hate picking favorites, but every time I pick my bracket, I keep going back to certain schools, and so I've got a couple
I think
days to figure it
Kentucky's
out.
gonna do really well. I don't think Tennessee will. I mean, the guards on Kentucky is just nutty in comparison to like everyone else. So I like UConn and Kentucky. I don't know where if and what if they're in the same division anymore because it's been a full day, but like I think those two are gonna be pretty awesome. And I think unfortunately Houston, because of how they can go just absolute cold, there's gonna lose sometime in the tournament.
All right, let's look
Oh, and
at
it's bullshit that Big East only got three fucking teams, and that's absolute horse shit. They were the second best division in all of college sports last year or this year. They should have gotten more, and you know who I'm talking about.
I know.
They
All right,
had the
we
Big
didn't
East player the
we
fucking
didn't
year too.
we didn't talk about some of these games on camera, but the ones we did, I did pick up another win with the Raptors, so I am +3 on the year.
Well, I had to bet on the situation, not on the team.
So we'll look at Monday's game, which is today at Chicago, back to back against the Clippers at home, and then Denver Saturday. After this, Portland will only have three more home games, which is crazy. They go out on a long 7-game road trip through March and into early April. So let's talk about the Chicago Bulls, a team that is just pedaling along in mediocrity, but man, they want that play-in. And Kobe White has been a revelation. They still
Is
got
he
DeMar
healthy?
DeRozan. He's questionable,
Okay.
but they still got DeMar. He's been clutch as hell all season. Patrick Williams is out. Still got Caruso. I mean, this is a team that came into Portland and kind of stole our cornbread. They made life miserable for Ant. That Ayo Dosunmu's been playing really well.
And then they
He
got
and Caruso were
Dalen.
very physical against Anfernee Simons. Portland lost 104 to 96 back on January 28th to the same Chicago Bulls.
I think that they have a really like, oh, I think the matchups dictate this game. I think DA is going to just absolutely feast on Chicago's bad centers. So I think that that is where we're going to shine. I just don't know how we're going to stop any of the DeMar's points. And then I think AO and Dalen Terry can really shut down Ant, Scoot, and Delano. So they just have a lot of wing defenders that can give us some trouble. So I think the Bulls are going to take this dub.
Yeah, I've got Chicago. There's no matchup I'm looking. I just want to Scoot. I think for him, he needs a good night, and I hope he gets it. I hope he can start to string together some solid performances. Stay out of foul trouble. That really hurt him,
Did you see how
especially.
physical he was with New Orleans?
Yeah, and he got
He should
some.
have picked up more than two fouls in those 90 seconds.
He got some really dumb fouls against Atlanta. Yeah, I just need to see him get some confidence back. He needs it too. But I've got Chicago. But the Blazers do not play well against lower opponents. They'll get up to play the good teams, but when they play, they let Toronto and Atlanta just hang around way too long. And it just so I expect
Without Scotty
Chicago.
Barnes and Trae Young.
Back to back against the Clippers. The Clippers are a team that just lost a massive game against the Hawks in the standings. They're getting dangerously close to falling out of home court advantage. Generally, I'd be like, oh, the Clippers might rest some people,
No,
but
they're
I
pissed
don't
off.
think they will. They've got Kawhi back. Norm Powell's been absolutely fantastic for them. Potential, sixth man of the year candidate. I think the Clippers easily take both of these games with the Blazers. I don't, and this is what we're talking about. Like if the Clippers come to play, I think it's a carbon copy of the Boston game.
Could
They've
you
got.
imagine Kawhi and Paul George blitzing Anthony Simons?
And what I
That's
want to see
how.
is Scoot in that Boston game played into what Boston wanted to do. He shot way too many early threes. Basically, Derek White welcomed him to just went under, sagged off of him. Scoot needs to figure out how to get into that mid-range. Just I know it's like taboo to shoot mid-range jump shots, but for God's sake, you're a mid-range maestro. Like I've seen the tape. You did it so well in Summer League too. Like shoot the fucking mid-range. It's there. So and then we have Denver 3-0 against the Blazers this year. Scoot did have a 30 burger against the Nuggets in Denver, and they played them tough both times in the Mile High City. Denver comes back to Portland. Denver's another team that's fighting for the top overall seed. And as long as Nikola Jokic plays, like they beat us without Jamal Murray, like as long as Nikola Jokic is there,
It's
I
not.
think Denver wins.
There's no game where I feel like I could take the advantage and make up in our game.
Chicago tonight, I think, is the one that Portland could surprise. But I think Chicago's playing for something. And there's a difference. Like when you're eliminated, like I think we've seen the last of Malcolm Brogdon this year. I'd be surprised at how many big minute nights we get from Ant and DA, especially with, you would hope that they would be smart and listen to Ant and say, hey, like my knee's kind of jacked up. Can we just scale it back a bit? I don't think you need to be playing them 40 plus minutes a night. Like,
I don't know how many 30-minute games they're gonna have. Like, if
yeah.
they want to play, they can play, but they're playing like, remember
I
when New
mean,
Orleans
next week
won?
when we talk, we're going to be seeing some tanktastic basketball because
Oh
we've
God.
got road games with Charlotte and Washington. So just imagine those lineups that the Blazers are going to trot
It's
out there.
gonna be absolutely disgusting. But like, remember when AD wanted to play on New Orleans and New Orleans wanted to trade him? So they played him 24 minutes a night exactly. That's what we're gonna see with DA, Jeremy Grant, and Anthony Simons.
I think that's fine for DA proved himself. Okay, you're good. Let's see more of Duop. If Bagi's gonna be a two-way contract player, we need to see more from him. If not, then that two-way opens up. Like I think Jabari needs more time. Like I want to see more from him.
Our
And
young dudes just need to get run.
yeah, and I want to see Rupert a little bit more like.
If we can have a Scoot and the rest of the rookies rest the season, I think that would be really good. So, I mean, yeah, I don't. We're gonna see
It,
some
it's tough.
fantastic stuff.
It's tough because you're talk we're trying to come up with different things to talk about, but the same storylines keep kind of playing themselves out this year.
Well, when we talked about the tourney, it was the most excited you and I both got. So,
Well, we got Dalton Connect. We'll record that on Wednesday. That'll be great. And then maybe a prospect will get hot that we can talk about going into the Sweet 16.
And I'm going to be talking about Dylan Jones of Weber State, who, if this was a different team, I would want him. I think that his playmaking is pretty otherworldly. But thank you to everybody for listening. We will be back Wednesday with the Dalton Connect episode. Peace out.
Wherever you may be, this is Bill Shinley. Good night, everyone. everybody.
Let's go! Come on, everybody, and let's go!